I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Hello and welcome to Blizzard Watch, where we watch Blizzard as fast and hard as we can. We have like millions of eyes just constantly watching them. I'm Matt Rossi, I'm the host, and with me this week we have two magnificent co-hosts. First up, he's here filling in for Alex, so I'll introduce him first. Mitch, how you doing, Mitch?
Good, thanks for calling me magnificent. You don't usually do that.
I know. I'm sorry. I don't want to throw you off and ruin our relationship by being nice to you, but
okay, that's...
occasionally it happens.
All right.
What have you been up to this week? Anything?
What have I been up to this week? Not a whole lot. Heroes here and there. Other non-Blizzard games occasionally. Raid teams working through Nighthold. I love Nighthold so far. And I love the Star Augur boss especially. Not only because it's an amazing looking fight, but because there's a lot of lore stuff kind of hidden-ish, not so hidden. But yeah, loving it so far.
Cool. Also with us, she does practically everything, so at this point I feel more like I'm wasting our time. I should just say, hey, Anne, because you know who she is. Everybody knows
hey.
Who she is.
She's hi.
Anne Stickney, what are you up to, Anne?
Not a whole lot, although, let's see, my rogue finally got a legendary, which was pretty cool. Like,
ooh, first congrats.
First legendary I've gotten on any of the characters that I've leveled to 110, and there are many of them. And then, I don't, like, everything else that I've been doing has just been kind of the same old, same old. I've gotten to the point on the Rogue where I need to go do Court of Stars and Nighthold. So,
yeah, I'm there
yeah,
too.
I need to get in there and do that so that I can actually finish the Suramar stuff. Hindsight is, you know, 2020, and honestly, I probably should have just leveled the Rogue first, because I'm having more fun in Suramar with the Rogue than I was on any other character.
I would imagine if you can stealth through a lot of that stuff.
Well, you could stealth. Now, keep in mind that those things that break your disguises, they also see right through stealth. So there is no, I mean, you're in the same amount of danger or whatever, but for whatever reason, it feels so much more Assassin's Creed. I don't know. I like it. I like it a lot. And there are points where it's like, I need to get up on top of that building. You know what? I'm just going to respec to Outlaw just for a second here to use that grappling hook.
Oh, I love the grappling hook. God, I love that thing.
Yeah, so I'm having a lot of fun with that. And my other characters are kind of like, not by the wayside necessarily, because Hattie, my hunter, right after we finished the stream last week, I finally went in and actually finished the Hunter Class Hall campaign. Like, got to the end of it and everything and unlocked the third slot and everything else. So I'm good to go for Mythics this week, guys. Yay!
Oh, that's cool. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Probably talk about top stories now, because we had a pretty big one drop, like, literally today. The patch 7.2 PTR just got an update there. We don't know when it will go live, but they've taken the PTR down for this.
Yeah, they took it down. They haven't put it back up yet.
It's a pretty big deal, because it's... basically, previous patch build was basically testing the Legion assaults and a few, you know, things like transmog. They're adding new stuff to transmog, But this one, they're basically throwing in new class order hall campaign stuff, mm-hmm. which unlocks the new artifact traits that are coming in 7.2. And in addition, they're putting in the Broken Shore Legion Fall reputation stuff, and you can test that. Stuff hasn't, it's not complete yet. You can't do the world bosses yet, and there's no rewards yet, but it's still a pretty big chunk of content that's being tested. From what I understand, the class order call stuff, what happens is you get, there's seven quests.
Unique chains.
Yeah, seven quest lines for it. And there's one for tanks. So all tanks get the same basic quest. There's two for healers. So I don't know how they're differentiating out the healers for this. Some healers get one quest, some healers get the other. And there's four quests for DPS.
So if you play a DPS class, like, oh, I don't know, a rogue, like I'm playing, you'll get a different quest for Assassination, Outlaw, and Subtlety. But one of those might cross over with, say, I think they used Fury Warrior as an example.
They basically, you know, they have enough variation in quests so that you don't get the same quests. It's every class, it's three different quests.
I mean, think about it the way, like, Shadow Priests and what, Arms Warriors went to the same place in mm-hmm. Tirzah Fall?
And Paladins, too. Holy
yeah, yeah, but, it, and but it means...
It's kind
of
like that.
It means if you want to do the quest for each of your different specs, you're not going to run into the same quest chain twice. So healers, even if you have two healing specs or whatever, you've got Holy and Discipline, you're going to go on both of those healing quests. Like, Holy will go on one, Discipline will go on the other, and then Shadow will probably go on one of the DPS quests.
I would hope so.
Yeah, so there's no real overlap there, and everybody gets kind of a unique experience, which I think is pretty cool. That's actually pretty awesome. The other thing that's going on the PTR as well, they are testing the PvP brawl system, which they had talked about. This is kind of the same thing that they introduced in Hearthstone and Overwatch, where you've got kind of a no-holds-barred area.
A
brawl.
They got it in Heroes
special,
now, too.
Yeah, with special rules. And every Friday for the next, I want to say, four weeks, something like that, the Blues are actually going to be playing on the PTR as well. So if you want a chance to brawl with the Blues, you can go ahead and do that.
This is the one where they're reintroducing the South Shore Tyrant Mill as one of the maps?
Yeah, that's one of the maps. I believe, let's see, I want to say one of the other maps. This week's update, they're introducing Gravity Lapse, which I'm not sure what's entailed with that one, but I think if I remember right, that's the one that takes place in, what's that battleground, the one out in Netherstorm?
Oh, Eye of the Storm.
Yeah, Eye of the Storm. I want to say that that was Eye of the Storm where that one takes place, but I could be completely wrong, so don't take me at...
Hold on, I'm looking it up right now.
Look it up, if you would. From what I understand, though, it's just, it's literally, it's Gravity Lapse every once in a while.
Gravity goes away. Eye of the Storm, Gravity Lapse, causing gravity to behave strangely.
Yes.
Like throwing everyone into the sky.
Right. So basically, it's the battleground maps that you know and love, but none of the rules apply. And there's a strange set of rules. I want to say one of the other ones that they mentioned at BlizzCon was throwing, doing a 15 versus 15 battle in an arena.
Yeah. Okay. So I pulled up a list. There's the 15 by 15 man group.
Uh-huh.
There's the South Shore Terran Mill. There's the Gravity Lapse, which we went over. Winter Arathi Basin, which has reduced visibility, updated art, and then the water's actually frozen.
It's Arathi Basin, the standard Arathi Basin map, but it's dead middle of winter and you can't see a dang thing because all the snow.
Eye of the Horn? Eye of the Storm puts everyone on ram mounts that shoot players off into the Twisting Nether. And then Insta-Cap Warsong Gulch, which I'm not quite sure what that means, but hey.
Maybe if you grab the flag, you cap it automatically?
Yeah, I think it sounds likely that that's that.
So it's like speed run?
Yeah, so...
Yeah, just get there. It basically will make defense a lot more important.
Yeah, because, so like many of Blizzard games, it's basically throw the rules out.
You throw the rules out, introduce some new stuff. I believe at BlizzCon they said that it probably won't be all that balanced, but it will be incredibly crazy. So I like it. I like the idea of it. I like the idea of throwing a new spin on some of these old places that I started doing Battlegrounds back when they were first introduced.
Yeah, halfway through vanilla.
Yeah, halfway. Halfway, three-quarters away.
If you think about it, it's sort of like a group brawlers guild, but for PvP, which kind of makes me wonder if this is sort of a testing ground for if they'll do something like this for PvE, Like, you know, at BlizzCon, they would, you know, spawn Hogger as like a super, like a 40-man raid boss. Like, kind of combining Brawler's Guild with this new PvP thing in the future, I think would be pretty cool, where you have like a PvE group facing off against something that's just ridiculous.
Nighthold, but every boss is twice as much health.
And well, Mythic Plus is kind of like that, isn't it?
It's a little bit like that, but yeah, I mean,
he's saying he would like it to be completely random, where he doesn't know, like that you'd go to a dungeon and
just have it be completely insane.
Suddenly, yeah. Every boss is Odin.
What? prove yourself to me. Prove yourself.
Not again.
Again.
But,
every boss is Odin, and the person escorting you through the entire dungeon is Gadgar's head in a bubble.
I feel like we should mention to people, just so people know, if you've been doing your artifact up to 54,
mm-hmm.
don't be afraid of that. Don't panic. In fact, it's probably your best move right now is to keep working on your artifact and not to save the artifact power things. The artifact power tokens aren't going to give you artifact power.
They don't carry over. They don't. You'll need to get all new ones.
So go ahead and use them now. Like, if you've got them, use them.
And if you've used as many as you possibly can, they do vendor for gold now, so you can always sell them off.
Yeah. And the reason for that is what happens is when 7.2 comes and you do this quest, all the points you've spent up to 54 will convert back, and you can spend them on the new traits. So
which is pretty great.
Yeah, that way you won't have to wait. You won't have to, like, you know, work to get all those traits. You'll just have them.
You're not going to start from ground zero.
Yeah, but when you refund those traits, like right now, I think if you have all 54, it's a 15% bonus to damage. They said something like, yeah, if you refund those extra 20 traits, you're not going to lose 15% damage. Like, there's going to be something to kind of balance it out, so it doesn't feel like you're losing power.
Yeah,
It's kind of confusing, but essentially it's, hey, don't worry about it too much.
Yeah.
The other thing newsworthy to note today, though, today is January 31st, and it should have been the day of the Kirin Tor Tavern Crawl event, mini holiday. Unfortunately, that has been disabled. There was an issue with it that didn't come up in the PTR, and it was an issue that they couldn't hotfix, so they just had to disable it altogether.
The Kirin Tor got so drunk that they couldn't do the
run. Yeah, so drunk that they couldn't even pull it off.
Hey,
so,
guys!
We got word on whether or not that's going to be addressed or re-released in the future. I know, I want to say that the Tavern Crawl was specifically set for January 31st. I don't think it had any other days on the calendar. So I'm kind of hoping that they move it so that we don't have to wait a whole year to see it. Because that was one of the ones that I was really looking forward to. I don't know why. It's just a stupid tavern crawl.
Anne had a bunch of beer on her desk ready to go.
I was going to take shots right along with my character. I could have used a day of heavy drinking. I'm just saying.
And I needed an excuse.
We all could.
So, that's been disabled. Unfortunately, there were some other hotfixes that came out. I don't think there was anything like super, super notable about those particular hotfixes.
Real quick, Vaiku in chat points out, I think July 31st is the next one. There is one scheduled for July 31st.
July 31st. I want to see it before then.
Yeah, I do too.
Give us one on Valentine's Day. That'd be great. No, don't, because a lot of people would miss out on it because they're probably legitimately doing stuff. I think that's about it for news, really. The only other thing of note that I can think of is there was talks about they are going to be looking at Overwatch. They're going to be looking at Bastion again. And
yeah, I haven't read up too much about this, but apparently people seem happy. He's going to get buffed, changed.
He's going to get changed a little bit. He's going to get buffed a little bit. There's some stuff going on with him.
As far as heroes goes, they released an image the other day that said, hey, where's Valyra? Can you help us find her or whatever? And it was like, it was an image on, I think, Garden of Terror, something like that. And just, there were heroes everywhere, different skins. It was like a Where's Waldo page, basically.
Hmm.
And, you know, Blizzard being Blizzard, heroes being heroes, everyone was like, okay, there's something going on here. This isn't just for fun. I totally missed it because I was thinking Kel'Thuzad's going to be the next hero because that's been on the, you know, rumor release for a while.
Absolutely.
But people noticed in the picture like infested Terran eggs, which is a thing Stukov does.
Oh boy.
So people are thinking that Stukov is going to be the next hero added to Heroes of the Storm.
That'd be great. It's a not a WoW person.
Well, that's exactly like I'm curious if Kel'Thuzad was technically planned for next and they switched it around because people were upset about so many Warcraft heroes, or if the leaked list that's been correct for like months now was finally wrong.
What kind of a role do you think Stukov would play?
I'm leaning either specialist or support. We do have a StarCraft support already. With Morales.
We have so many
assassins. Yeah.
But
the game is lousy.
Technically, he has like support style abilities, like canonically, but he plays a lot more specialist in like, because he's a StarCraft 2 co-op hero. So I'm leaning either support or specialist.
Was there anything in there like hints towards maybe Lucio showing up? Because I still want him to show up.
Not in this picture. It was just the Stukov corrupted eggs or whatever. But yeah. Being, on the normal release schedule, we'll probably hear more in a week or two.
So, yeah, with those Bastion changes, obviously those aren't actually, like, in the game or anything yet. They aren't even on the PTR yet. They're saying that they would like to have those testable in the next PTR. And one of the things that they're looking at, this is the really big one, right? Bastion may be able to use his self-repair while he's moving and also have it no longer be interrupted when he's taking damage.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's a lot of the problem with Bastion right now is, if he goes into self-repair mode, all you have to do is hit him to interrupt it. And he can't cast it while he's moving. He has to sit in one spot. So it's not really that effective. And it makes him a little bit tissue paper for people who know how to counter Bastion and take care of him. The other thing that they're looking at is they're looking at kind of focusing sentry mode back into more of a tank buster and barrier buster mode while also making it feel like it's a little less suicidal to be transformed, because with sentry mode you have to plop down in one spot, and anytime you plop down in one spot where you don't move, that immediately puts you open to snipers, which is why sniper characters are very, very effective at getting rid of Bastion, by the way.
A frontal shield, like
he's gone through some weird changes. The thing is that frontal shield made him way too powerful, like people just couldn't kill him.
Yeah.
Like, they couldn't kill him at all. So, I mean, they needed that opening where it was like, okay, particular characters are really effective against Bastion. Because that's kind of how the game works, is you've got one hero and that hero has, like, a handful of heroes that are really good at killing that hero. But that hero is also really good at killing a handful of characters. So it kind of balances out. Bastion's one of those ones that hasn't quite fit in just as smoothly as everybody else, I think. So yeah, the other thing that they're looking at is recon mode. They're looking at lowering the spread and increasing the magazine size to help with just the general viability in that particular mode. This is all stuff that they're supposed to have testable on the PTR, hopefully on the next one. If not the next one, then the one after that. So keep an eye out for that. If you're familiar with Bastion, if you're all fond right. of Bastion, I am. I like the robot.
Okay, well, I think we can move on to emails at this point. If you have an email for the show, please send it to podcast@blizzardwatch.com. Put Blizzard Watch in the title, the subject line, if you can. That's really helpful. You guys have been trying really hard on keeping them short, so we all appreciate it, because Anne has to read these things. A couple of these ones are kind of long. I apologize, Anne, but nevertheless.
It's okay. I have coffee.
Here we go. Anne's going to read them to you guys, so take it away.
Okay, so our first email is from okay, it's supposed to be, I think, ex-outlaw poet, but I'm just going to call you Zoutlaw Poet, an undead holy priest on Kil Jaeden.
I thought that was some kind of Aztec name or something. I didn't even notice.
I don't know. I'm just going to say Zoutlaw Poet, undead holy priest on Kil Jaeden, who says, the main undead storyline with Queen Sylvanas seems to be, quote-unquote, making more undead. But we've got multiple ways to make them, seemingly, from Valkyr, Variant Plague Alchemy, and good old Necromancy. So why do we keep abandoning the ways we found already to look for the newest shiny way to make undead, like Helios Lantern? My undead priest loves his queen and wants to help out, but the quests and raids don't seem to provide a way forward other than just stopping the Legion. Which is great, but doesn't advance the undead metaplot. Much love to the gang. Tell Rossi I bought his book and it's really good so far. As far as that goes, keep in mind that the Valkyr are a limited resource. There are only so many of them left.
And under she's Sylvanas's lost quite a few.
Yeah. Under Sylvanas' control.
How many did she lose? She lost three? She lost three just raising her from the dead.
Like, yeah. There were those three, and then there was the one that sacrificed herself because Sylvanas jumped off of... So there were... Okay.
Yeah.
So four, and then I want to say that there was another one.
The one that died in Anderhall.
The one that died in... So five. There were five that have died.
She had nine originally, didn't she?
She had nine originally.
Oh, she had nine originally? Because there's, like... Those are the things that come and, you know, save everybody at the Broken Shore. She, like, calls them down, and I couldn't remember how many she actually had left. Because I admit I was kind of surprised to see them at the Broken Shore, but if she had nine, that makes sense.
Yeah, she
She does not have a ton of them.
And also, the Valkyr work a lot better than the Plague.
Yes.
The Plague doesn't always raise you as a Forsaken or a Scourge, for that matter. Sometimes it just kills you.
Well, I mean, because the Plague was originally, like, the first time we really saw it in action was Wrathgate, right? And that was where it was used against the Scourge and the Living. Like, that was the whole point, was that it was...
It kind of melted everybody, really. Well,
but even if we're talking about the original Plague of Undeath...
Like, the original go back to Anderhall, Grain.
Yeah. That one doesn't always raise you, and it doesn't always raise you as an undead with any sort of free will. That's not great, because Sylvanas doesn't... For all that she is a maniac, she doesn't want mindless Scourge.
She needs malleable, recently deceased minds that can be melded under her control.
She's looking for people who will actually follow orders and not just send them in waves at somebody. Like, most of the Scourge's tactics are throw bodies at it, and Sylvanas can't afford throw bodies at it.
Yeah.
So she doesn't... That plague won't work for that reason. I mean, they used it in Gilneas. You'll notice that instead of getting a whole bunch of undead out of Gilneas, she got a bunch of puddles.
Keep in mind, too, that, I mean, I know, Zetla Poet, you said variant plague alchemy. That may very well be what she's trying to get the Royal Apothecary Society to put together, is some kind of plague that will raise Forsaken rather than mindless Scourge, or, you know, not even Scourge, just Puddles. Mindless zombies, that kind of thing. Obviously, they haven't been successful at that yet, so...
I mean, look at South Shore, too.
Yeah, South Shore just melted everybody.
Yeah.
Except for that jerk, like, what's his name? Chet?
Yeah.
I don't remember who they didn't get killed.
Chet.
But there's also... The problem with necromancy is actually pretty simple. If you actually look at the Forsaken, they don't have a lot of actual necromancers. They don't have guys who are just standing around raising dead. That's the kind of dude you find in the Cult of the Damned. And they're generally raising, like, mindless undead again. Like, the only one I can think of is Lillian Voss. And I don't know if she died she came back from the plague or from necromancy.
Well, it was a Valkyr that raised her.
Yeah, so again, it's a Valkyr. And that's... Even when Voss went into Sholomance, she even, like, points out the necromancers are, you know, are rubbish. They just make, you know, mockery corpse things. They're not... The Plague of Undeath was a huge deal because it did something that that necromancers can't do reliably. It created an army of undead. Most necromancers are lucky if they can do a couple. You know, it's not something
do a couple reliably. Without any of them turning on said necromancer and immediately destroying him or her.
The best necromancers are guys who turn themselves into liches most of the time. Like, you know, the ones like Kel'Thuzad or I can't remember his name, but Thelizad?
Yeah, I know which one.
The Dustbringer, who used to be Father Inigo Montoya, who's apparently Kel'Thuzad's illegitimate son, but I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of complicated stuff going on there that kind of behind the scenes.
There's one lich Anil will remember this. He's in Netherstorm, I think. He's like in the place with the Kirin Tor.
Oh,
I know who you're talking about, and I don't remember what his name is.
That guy made himself a lich completely independently of the Forsaken or the Scourge or anybody. He figured it out himself, and you'll notice he wasn't in it trying to make more undead for anybody else. He wanted to make himself a lich so he'd be immortal.
He just wanted to live forever.
Yeah, so...
Which, I guess that is kind of living forever in a way.
Well, because you
can
also have
the... At the expense of things like flesh.
I mean, because even if he's killed, don't you have to destroy the phylactery or whatever?
The phylactery, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so basically, Sylvanas is doing the best method she has while continuing to find a better method if she can, which is why she
needs a reliable way, because none of the ways that have been presented so far have been reliable or anything that could be used in mass quantities with anywhere near the effect of the Lich King. And keep in mind that original run of Forsaken, the way that they were created was very different from anything else, because Arthas raised all of these creatures into mindless scourge, and then just due to the fact that Illidan struck a blow against the Lich King, it weakened that connection enough that they were able to snap out of it and regain their free will. That's how they became Forsaken. There's no way to really recreate that unless you go to Bolvar and say, hey, so can you just raise a lot of undead and then kind of forget about them for just a split second, like long enough that we can take them in? And I don't think that Bolvar would be very keen on that.
He's not really Bolvar-y as of late either.
No, he's not. He's got his own thing going on, which is
plus different. We should mention this. Helia's Lantern isn't a new shiny way.
No.
It is essentially, it's just a means for her, for Sylvanas to bind the current Valkyr that work for Odin into her service.
It's to get more Valkyr, basically.
Because the Valkyr are the best option she's found. They're the most reliable option. They work the best. Mostly because even before Arthas got his hands on them, the concept of Valkyr as raisers of the dead, you know, dates back to when Odin first made them. That's their role. And since
that's what they're real good at.
Yeah. So it's a situation where they're the best option for what she wants to do.
But like the ones that are bound to her right now basically made a deal with her so that they could serve her and work with her in exchange for, you know, getting them away from the Lich King, because they were tied. They were bound to one creature, and that creature was gone, and they needed to be bound to someone. So they made a deal with Sylvanas. The only reason they are loyal to Sylvanas right now is because they made a deal with her. None of the other Valkyr out there have made that deal with Sylvanas, and they could all care less.
Yeah, the ones that work for Odin directly serve Odin out of loyalty. And, you know, you get to even see it. You go to the Halls of Valor. They're very different kinds of Valkyr.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that Helia has serving her, either she compelled them or they rebelled with her.
Yeah.
So some of the Valkyr were like, no, Odin's a tyrant.
And none of them are super keen on working with Sylvanas. So she kind of needed that lantern. Really?
And not to harp on this question too much more, but I mean, the Valkyr aren't a bad way of raising undead. Their problem is their limited supply. The method itself, like she showed Garrosh back in Silverbind, she had a bunch of dead humans, raised them all at once. I mean, and it did exactly what she wanted. It's just that she doesn't have a whole lot of Valkyr to do that.
Okay. So I hope that answers your question, Zoutlaw. If nothing else, we talked about it a lot. So there's that. Next email. Doesn't have a name attached to it. It just says hashtag Patreon supporter, which is great. We like those. So this one says greetings, etc. And there's three questions here. We're just going to answer them in turn, okay? First question. Chronicles Volume 2 will be out in March. What specific topics are you most hoping to have clarified other than what's official lore from Warcraft 1 and possibly 2? I don't know how far Chronicles 2 will take us. And this actually ties into question 2, so we'll go there. Question 2 says, do you know or suspect whether they'll release a Volume 3? To be perfectly clear, what I have heard about Chronicles Volume 2 is that it doesn't actually involve Azeroth lore so much as it focuses on Draenor lore. So we're going to be hearing more about the Breakers and the Primals and all of that, like the early development of Draenor and possibly like evolution of the orcs and things like that, if I remember correctly.
If that's correct, then the thing I want to know most is the entire line of ogres. Like, where do they
ogres
come from?
Ogres and then the Arakoa. Yeah. give me a couple of really big chapters on Arakoa history. I will eat that stuff up.
Why do they have those big robots that look like something out of Old War? Why are they so sun-focused, like the Night Elves?
I want to know how the Titans interacted with that world, because obviously there is Titan technology on Draenor. Did it have a world soul at some point? Did it not have one? Is it just one of those ones that they cultivated, found out it didn't have a world soul, and then left it behind? Or what
is
goes on with that?
I want to know, like, Old God stuff, because there's hints of Old God lore and Outland.
Oh, yeah. If you go to Outland, they're, like, directly trying to summon an Old God out there.
So there's also a possibility the Anzu and all that stuff from both Burning Crusade and Warlords connects to the Old Gods.
Mm-hmm.
Because the blood thing that curses them definitely has an Old God feel to it.
Yeah.
So, and that feels very much like the red mist that gets used in the Shattrath fight that creates the Broken. And it would make sense that an Old God related thing would turn you into a mutant freak monster.
So basically Chronicles 2 looks like it's going to be really fascinating. Not necessarily focused on Azeroth history so much as showing us kind of the expanded universe, which I'm perfectly cool with. And yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to, is like the Arakoa. And also I want to see more about the primals, like the plant dudes in particular, because they're really like the Batani, because they're really creepy. And I really wanted to learn so much more about them in Warlords, and it never happened. So I'm kind of hoping that Chronicles 2 kind of focuses on that a little bit.
I think there's actually one of them in Nighthold, which is interesting.
You mean the guy who's like a
high botanist?
Yeah, the high botanist. He himself isn't a Batani. He turned himself into a plant thing.
Yeah, he turned himself into, it was sort of like that guy from Botanica, only on speed.
Yeah, he straight up,
instead of speed, substitute Nightwell juice.
Yeah, he straight up turned himself into a plant monster.
Yeah.
That's how into it he was.
As far as whether or not they'll release a volume 3, I guess that kind of depends on how the sales go for volume 2, but I would hope so. I really liked the first edition of Chronicle. I imagine I'm going to like the second edition just as well. And I would love to see them come out with a 3. I'd like to see them, you know, catch everything up to date instead of just, you know, why not just do a big run of it. 15 volumes, make it like an encyclopedia, just a really big, long one. It'd be great. Okay. So
Anne loves lore.
I do. I really do. I would like to catalog every last bit of it. Okay, so third question here. Am I the only one who thinks it's time for Blizzard to upgrade its maps? I don't want pre-drawn maps, but once I've found a location, I think it's reasonable to have an idea of where roads and tunnels and mountains and impassable terrain are. Running to a spot only to find it's a hillside you can't scale is not fun.
I know your pain, especially in places like High Mountain, but one of the charms of Blizzard is that its map style has remained relatively constant.
Yeah.
And I know I'm an old player. I know that this is nostalgia talking, but I remember the first time I went into, I'm going to use a zone that not everybody likes. The first time I went into Alterac, and as I'm riding around, there's that moment where you hit a place and the name of that area flashes over your screen and you get the whoosh sound. And I used to stop and open my map and look and see what I just discovered. And I always liked it. I always liked when you go find a refuge pointy, as I like to call it, because they stick an E on the end of the word point for no reason. I remember the first time I found it, I didn't know it was there. I had no clue it was there. So I remember hearing the noise and like, refuge point, what? And I look at the map and I'm like, over there? I like that. I think it's something that's familiar enough to me that I'm fond of it. I don't want them to go nuts trying to update it and make it realistic, as much as I do from time to time get very frustrated. Like, why is there a cliff here? I need to get over this.
Suramar City in particular is really difficult for me anyway, map-wise, just because the city is on several different levels, and you can't tell which level the quest mob is that you're looking for is on. So sometimes, I mean, like lately, for all of the quests in the northern part of the zone, my best bet is to just go to Crimson Thicket, ride down, and then just like hop on my glider and try and glide to the point where I need to be.
Yeah, when I was doing the Suramar quests, I did that a lot because there's especially when you're trying to do a specific quest. I won't spoil for whatever the three people who haven't done it. But you're trying to find people and tell them something, and they're surrounded by elites. And it's like, oh, God. It's like everywhere I have to go is full of elites that can, you know, tell what illusions are.
I would say, you know, from my perspective, I like the maps how they are. I think if I were to make changes, one, I have gotten so used to zooming in and out on the map on flight paths that it's jarring to not be able to do it in old content. I would love to have that added. And for something like Suramar City, they've done pretty well with like caves and stuff. Just, you know, make it a sub map, give it its own map when you're in that zone. I think that would, like, if there's more complicated areas, just let them have their own map.
Yeah. I kind of wish it had its own map. That would make things so much easier if it had its own map with like the little areas clearly labeled, like here, up here's the menagerie where that annoying dinosaur is at. And down here is that market that you spend way too much time in.
I mean, it's one of the most densely packed, like, complicated cities in the game.
I love it.
I love it all. Like, it's awesome. But, you know, Orgrimmar, Undercity, all whatever. Every single city has its own map, and Suramar City is arguably more complicated than some of those, and it does not.
I would be willing to accept that Suramar could use its own map, or even a couple of maps. Like, if you could provide a map for each terraced level, because it has, like, three of them, kind of like, this one of the things about Suramar that you don't really understand at first, like Anne was talking about the levels thing, is that it's a series of like of circular zones around, like each next zone is like a core that the previous zone is like above and also around completely. And then, you know, you get to the center part, and that's kind of like the Nightwell is actually,
it's like a bunch of stacked horseshoes.
Yeah. So it's, I've found that water mounts are very useful in Suramar.
Oh, absolutely.
Because half the time I don't try and navigate Suramar City. I get on the water and skip the whole freaking place. That's how I was at frothing, almost incoherent rage at Suramar to the point where I wanted to burn it down. I hated it so much. And then I realized water mount. The water mount makes it much more.
You can walk through the canals that way too, which is kind of nice.
I think, and I have to double check that I don't have the map on this character, but I think the one nightmarish place in Hinterlands, the troll like ruins or whatever, I think they added Zolothway? A sub map. What was that?
Like Zolothway, I think it was called, or something.
Something like that. And
wait, in the Hinterlands?
Yeah.
Are you talking about Jyntholore?
Yes, Jyntholore. Yeah. I think they added a sub map.
I believe it's got its own sub map now. Yeah.
And it didn't used to, and the sub map makes it so much better, and that's the kind of thing I, you know, would like to see.
Yeah. That's the kind of thing. It'd be nice. Hey, Blizzard, you want to make that happen? 7-2? Let's do it. Let's do it. Just make it happen.
It does, in fact, have its own map now.
Okay. So our next email is from Cog Grinder, and it says, hi, from Cog Grinder, part of the Goblin Cog Sextuplets from the Grand Oceanic Realm. Level 110, I level 8, 65 Arcane Mage. Thank you for the mouthful, Cog Grinder. Says, thanks for the awesome show. Personable and intelligent discussions are always entertaining. If people get the opportunity, they should do the Patreon thing, support the things you like. I agree. Okay, this is also a series of questions, so we're just going to answer them in turn. First question, do you now all have legendaries or more than one? And if so, which ones, and are you happy with them, aka best in slot? Rossi?
I have one legendary on one of my warriors and one legendary on my Death Knight. My Death Knight got that ring.
Is that Sifuzz's secret?
Yeah, Sifuzz's secret or whatever it is, which it isn't a bad ring, but I mean, it's the base of it is to interrupt or do a loss of control effect. Like if I were a mage, I'd be sheeping everything to get more haste. That would be great. But on my Death Knight, basically, I have to try and interrupt things. And usually, I mean, I do try and interrupt things while I'm tanking, but I mean, I do have other stuff to do. So sometimes I miss an interrupt or two, so the ring doesn't feel as useful as it could. But it's a 940 ring. I mean, come on.
It got a lot better in this patch, too. I know, I think, especially for healers, because I think you can dispel people and get the effects. And it became
blood decay, not dispelling anything.
Yeah, it became best in slot or close to best in slot for a couple people. Where it's a good ring, used to be though. Terrible. But yeah.
It is a good ring, and I like it, but it could be better. And my warrior has the belt, the Nagentus's girdle, which it's not best in slot or anything. But what the thing I like about this belt is that it makes my whirlwind. Anything I hit with whirlwind over three mobs, I hit them twice. Whirlwind doesn't just hit them once; it hits them twice. So every time I hit whirlwind on a group of mobs that's like over three mobs, my DPS goes up to crazy levels.
So it's like Wind Fury Whirlwind.
Yes. It's very nice. It's only
that
9
sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's very nice for trash. It's one of those weapons for Fury. The thing about Fury is that Whirlwind is rage free for Fury. So as a Fury warrior in Nighthold, my trash DPS is crazy. Like, I mean, I'm not that well geared yet, but I'm like, I spike up to like 979, you know, very, very high compared to like what it normally is. It's really nice. Those are the ones I have on my
own. For me, I have the one that I got on my rogue, and it's actually that same ring, Sifuzz's Secret, I think is what it's called. Something like that. Yeah, anyway, so on your rogue, guess what I do a lot of? Interrupting. Also stunning. So that ring's awesome. And I love it. And I'm really happy I got it. It's a 940 too, because I got it like after the patch. So
yeah, even if you didn't like the ring that much, when you, I was using an 820
just
ring.
The sheer boost to eye level alone was fantastic. Like the stats on that thing are great. Anyway, Mitch, what about you?
I think you're
swimming in them, aren't you?
I actually got another one this morning. So I'm up to 5 on my priest. None of my other characters have it, but to be fair, I don't play them that often. I have the Twins Painful Touch. Basically, I think 4 of them are actually Shadow specific, And one of them is just kind of the general caster one, where, like, if you don't move, you get a... If you don't move for 8 seconds, your next cast, you can cast while moving. I don't have the best in slot yet, which is the shoulders. But honestly, I'm really happy with the ones I have. I got... The very first one I got was the headpiece, which made VE heal for 250% more in void form. And while it's like, oh, that's not a DPS increase, that is super, super useful as a cooldown, especially in Mythic Pluses. So, you know, when we were progressing through those, I could pop that as though I were a healer, you know, popping a group cooldown. And it made a huge difference. You know, right now I switched because the one I got today is pretty good. But yeah, I'm happy with them overall. I can get 10 as a Shadow Priest, and I have 5 of them, so can't complain.
Can't complain. So second question here kind of ties into that. Does everyone who plays have legendaries now? Are there any stats for who has what and how many? Over my 3 level 110s, I have 6 legendaries, 3 on my Fury Warrior, 2 on my Arcane Mage, and 1 on my Elemental Shaman. My sons joke that I have more legendaries than some guilds. I play a bit, but I'm not a mythic top flight raider or such, so are legendaries fairly common now, or has RNG just been kind?
You know, people who've got like 4 or 5 legendaries like Mitch, and then other people in my same guild don't have any.
Yeah, it's definitely not a case where everybody has legendaries right now.
And I didn't... I've only got the one,
you know. Yeah.
I didn't get one for like a real long time of playing pretty constantly. And my Death Knight one got one like on the first chest I opened after the patch. Like the very first
page
I opened, I got one. And I was like, what?
There have been pretty clear instances where Blizzard's like, yeah, let's up the rate. Because there have been some Tuesdays. I think there have been 2 specifically where it's just like... You know, because I'm in kind of a crossover.
It's a joyous pinata of orange items.
So we have 10 different guilds kind of chat all linked. And it was just, you know, orange every not couple minutes, but it was often enough where it was like, okay, something's going on here that people aren't just being, you know, exceptionally lucky. Like they're being lucky, but the rates definitely went up. I think it also depends on what people do, because you know, Rossi said he played kind of consistently for a long time. You know, if you're playing consistently for a long time and you're only doing, you know, world quests, you're not doing dungeons, like dungeons, technically each boss is a chance at a legendary, which means...
Which we found out last week on last week's stream because Alex got one for his Warlock.
Which means each boss that you don't get one increases your bad luck protection slightly. Mm. So if you're the kind of player that plays a lot and when you play, you're running dungeons... Your chances are going to go up faster than someone who's playing and doing solo content.
Whereas if you don't do dungeons so much, aka me, you don't really see it that often. And I have to admit that most of my play is spent, you know, doing world quests and that kind of thing. I don't typically do a lot of dungeons just because I don't have time to wait in the queue. I really don't. I don't have time to wait. I should be clear about that. I don't have time to like wait an hour in the queue and then spend the rest of that time doing a single dungeon. Like that's just not, I got better things I could be doing with my time. I really do. So I kind of have to go do those. All right. Third question here is more of a role playing question. So I don't know if you guys want to answer this or not, but it says, do you have families of characters, mostly goblins for me, as you can tell, or do you prefer not to do role-playing links and go for the one of each race with or without a backstory? Rossi, oh, wow. I think maybe you could answer this because you've written stories about your characters before.
This is complicated.
Because you don't do like actual role-playing, but I know you develop like stories for your characters.
I do story. I actually do a little role-playing because I have a character on Cenarian Circle, so I do role-play with those. One of my characters is my original rolled him like when I first started playing WoW, have had this character for like ever character. He's currently a human warrior. He has race switched before, but right now he's a human warrior, which is what he started as. So he's the same guy and he doesn't relate it to any other character I have, but in the story that I came up with him for him, he and my wife's oldest character are effectively in a relationship, but it's a very snarky, annoying relationship where they don't really like each other all that much, but they've been
like you and me.
Yeah, very much. They've been hanging out forever, so I'm kind of like her pet because she's a night elf and she can't quite get around the idea that humans are people. You know, they only live like 100 years. Come on. But so there's those characters. But most of my other characters are kind of related. Like I have I've got like four Night Elves. I've got my Night Elf Death Knight. I've got a Night Elf Warrior. I've got another Night Elf Warrior that I haven't played in a while. I've got a Worgen Warrior who I never unworgen. So all of them I consider related. They're in a family. Also my Night Elf Hunter, who I rolled fairly recently. They're all effectively related to each other. They're like an extended family of cousins, various age ranges. And they don't all get along or even like each other, but they're all, they're part of this family. If they could have a last name, they'd all have the same last name. And I do have a last name for them, but I don't want to share it because it's personal to me. I am that kind of dork. And also I've got a bunch of Draenei. Like I've got four Draenei warriors. All of those characters are related. One of them is extremely old. One of them is actually about as old as Velen. Like he dates back to that time. Another is like his nephew. Another is like actually the niece of that character, and thus is related, but it goes back, you know, they're, because Draenei generations can be extremely diffuse. I actually did write a story about that character, like the one that's like the middle-aged one, because when I went to Draenor, I couldn't, it was like just so much, I kept like thinking, why are we not doing more with the Draenei? Why are we not doing more with, like, oh my God, it's that guy. It's Exarched, oh God, I can't remember his name now, but you remember him, the one, Maladar. When you go and Maladar is there and he's like not crazy, and I'm like, oh my God, he's not nuts, and he's like this total like leader of this people. Could you see him right up front? Remember when you first go to Draenor? He's like,
yeah,
the first Draenei you see, other than, you know, the ones you brought with you. And so I wrote this whole thing about that. Yeah, I kind of do this and I kind of don't, depending. Like my Tauren, I have two Tauren. Like one's a Tauren warrior and one's a Tauren Death Knight. I haven't played my Tauren Death Knight in like three expansions, because it just was so hard to get around. Like, I didn't want him to be like Trag High Mountain. I wanted him to be his own character, but it's kind of hard to imagine like what a Tauren Death Knight would be like. Like, you know, it's a complete repudiation of everything they stand for. You know, the whole Earth Mother thing, that whole thing. If he was like a Yongol or a Tonka, I could buy it. But as a Tauren, I have a really hard time coming up with a story for him. And my Tauren warrior was great. I loved him. I miss playing Horde just for that character, which you knew him.
Yeah.
You know? And I liked playing him just because it was hilarious. You'd be on your motorcycle.
Yes.
And I jump in the sidecar. And seriously, my
Blood
poor
Elf
Tauren,
on a motorcycle with a Tauren in the sidecar.
My Tauren was like crammed into that sidecar going, this is fine. No.
This is fine.
No, little friend.
I could have driven, but okay.
Well, it's like I enjoyed it because like it was a really weird guild, and I didn't get to roleplay all that much, but I liked playing him with them because I imagined he was absolutely convinced that they were all children.
Yes.
Because they're so small. So even though he knows...
There were a lot of elves in that guild.
he knew intellectually that they weren't children, and in fact, they were a lot older than he was, but he kept like going, oh, it's okay, little friend, I'll get in front, and I'll let the monster punch me. The monster will punch me, and you and little dead friend can be in the back and just stab it, or set it on fire. I think other little dead friend sets things on fire. Actually, it's shadow magic. Whatever, you do that, that's good. I don't know if I like shadow magic.
Little small people.
Yeah, it was just an entire guild of tiny people and me, and occasionally an orc. Like, orcs
and
are okay.
Occasionally an orc.
Orcs are okay.
There were a lot of elves and undead in that guild.
So yeah, I kind of do and I kind of don't.
So what about you, Mitch? Do you do any role playing at all, or is it just like you're just playing the game, play game?
I don't really do role play. I follow the same naming convention for my characters, which is F something ZZL.
Yes.
And I usually, you know, almost always go undead, sometimes blood elf on Horde side, and almost always night elf on Alliance side. So I have certain conventions I stick to, but it's not because I'm like role-playing them as a family or anything. It's just my own personal convention.
As for me, I have a bunch of different characters, and while their stories may be related in that they have interacted with each other and have a history, none of them are actually related to each other. I don't really do families for any of my characters. I'm a fan of like, let's just cut all of that stuff out of there, because I don't really want to get too involved with it. Like, those families existed and there are memories and stories about those families, but they aren't like a prevalent thing with any of my characters.
These characters are all the protagonists of a Disney movie that hasn't been written yet.
No, they aren't.
Oh, that would be great.
It'd be a really dark Disney movie. I have a lot of really terrible characters. You have no idea.
Yeah, have you actually like watched the old Disney movies recently? Because they're depressing as hell.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't think any of my characters are depressing. They're just kind of like, they're a little bit on the intense side, I guess, most of them. Although my Forsaken Priest is, she is admittedly just comic relief. Totally comic relief. She hates being undead. She would rather just like sleep forever. And every time anybody wants her to do something, it's like, oh, not again, you know? All right. So yeah, thanks for the questions there, Call Grinder. Appreciate it. I think we have time for one more, so let's go ahead and jump into this one. It says, hey, Watchers, I have an idea for an Overwatch franchise, and I want to know what you think about it. As I've learned about Overwatch lore, I realize there's a lot of potential for a story that takes place before the quote-unquote present-day story that the game takes place within. In addition to their development of present-day events, such as the introduction of Sombra, they've also established an interesting history for the characters that I think could be expanded upon with a new game release that would serve as a prequel to the FPS. However, instead of another FPS game, I think they should tell this prequel story through a Warcraft 3-style RTS. I think telling the story of the Omnic Crisis and the rise of the Overwatch as a full-on war campaign would be an amazing experience, with the heroes of Overwatch serving as either the commanders, like in StarCraft, or as hero units, like in Warcraft 3, or both. This could also include scaled-down stealth missions featuring Rays and the Blackwatch. I'm sorry for making this a long email, but I really wanted to fully explain the concept I have in mind. So, what do you guys think? This doesn't have a name attached. Overwatch RTS. What do you guys think?
I don't know if you'd call Halo Wars an RTS or more of a 4X, mm-hmm. but whatever you call it, Halo Wars is really good. And that's why I included this email, because if you made an Overwatch Halo Wars, oh my God, people would never... Again, going back to, remember World of StarCraft comic way back when, people like, people just stop peeing. They don't pee anymore. That's what would happen. You would never, people would just never leave their houses. Food delivery would just skyrocket. Maybe it would save the economy for all I know, because people would just be getting everything delivered, because they'd be trapped forever in the soft, vice-like grip of robot Overwatch RTS.
What about you, Mitch?
Yes and no. I mean, on a practical level, the teams at Blizzard that work on the like RTS games, totally different from Overwatch. So it would either be a bunch of people who have been working on an FPS shifting to an RTS, or a bunch of people have been working on...
Theoretically, they would make an entirely new team to work on this specific thing.
Yeah, which also... But, like, do you carry people over? Practicality,
I'm going to point out right now that we know that they're doing a mystery project and haven't told us what it is yet.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. Practicality,
I'm not saying
aside,
it is an
though,
Overwatch... I'm not saying it is an Overwatch RTS. I'm just saying.
I think if they're going to do another RTS, I would rather have them do a Warcraft RTS. Like, I think... Overwatch, I like the way that they're telling the story through the shorts and stuff. Someone in chat does mention, you know, Overwatch models for the StarCraft 2 engine. That could be cool. Like, if you want to do, like, a fan-made project where you recreate some of these. I just... Like, it's a cool idea. I just think if they were to do an RTS, I would rather have it be Warcraft 4 or... I don't know.
Quite frankly, okay, I don't
know. Okay, so... I'm going to interrupt here because I don't think that it should be an RTS, and there's a reason why. There's one genre Blizzard hasn't jumped into yet that I think they could make a killing on with the right team and with the right IP. No, just a single player RPG. Let us do the single player RPG of the early Overwatch days. I mean, the way that it works right now with the Overwatch lore and the Overwatch story and the Overwatch universe is that we have this story that's being presented through these animated features, right? Beautiful animated features. And we have this story that's being told through, like, the various comics and things like that. Overwatch, the game in and of itself, is like they handed us all of these characters and said, here's your action figures, go play with them. And we're just sitting there going, pew, pew, smacking them together and stuff, right? That's how that works. I think that if they wanted to tell that earlier story and if they wanted to let us play through it, it would work better in that RPG format where it's like a single player experience, not a multiplayer, just a single player, but one that has a definitive beginning, middle, and end. And the early days of Overwatch really do have that story already prepackaged, because you've got the formation of, well, you've got the introduction of the Omnic Crisis all the way through the destruction of Overwatch, like the whole blow up at the Swiss headquarters and everything. And that could be your definitive end right there, like the end, the fall, the downfall of Overwatch. And you could split that into, like, you could split it into a Mass Effect style trilogy if you wanted to, but wouldn't that be cool? Maybe?
I would definitely prefer that over an RTS.
I would love to see them tackle a single-player RPG. I think that they'd be fantastic at it, and I don't know why they haven't done it yet. But
I honestly don't know that they have the interest in doing something that isn't multiplayer right now. That's the only reason.
I know, but they should.
Well, when I look at what Blizzard's doing game-wise, like, they seem to be really focused. Like, you know, I've written breakfast topics saying give us a single player or a roguelike. Like, I've thought for years, why don't we have an Assassin's Creed style game with Nova's in it? Just Nova doing an assassin, because, you know, the game they were actually going to make with Nova, StarCraft Ghost.
Well, they had Covert Ops.
And they, yeah, but Covert Ops is still StarCraft.
It didn't do, you know, yeah, it wasn't the same thing.
No, and there's lots of games out there, like, you know, you can sit here and just daydream about an Overwatch that's kind of like StarCraft. I mean, not like StarCraft, like, I can't remember the name of the game now. It's one of the biggest RPGs, Skyrim. Like, you could imagine a Skyrim sandbox game for Overwatch.
See, and I wouldn't even want a Skyrim style. Actually, you know, if I were going to look at it, I would look at it at something in the style of, like, Mass Effect or any of the BioWare games where it's, like, a shooter. Or, you know, you're a caster. Or you're what, like, you can make a customizable hero who's maybe part of that whole Overwatch story but didn't necessarily have a huge place in history or anything. And you just get to go through...
Or you play Doomfist.
And live all of this with them. You know, no. You get to experience all of this stuff with them, that kind of thing. And
I want to be Doomfist. I'm sorry. I want to be
Doomfist. You want to be Terry Crews?
Terry Crews. Yeah.
Because they've had that gauntlet forever. Like, yeah. That gauntlet's in the original cinematic they made. I want to know what's going on with that dude. What happened to Doomfist?
Originally, it was meant as Doomfist. A throwaway.
Yeah, I'm hoping that they'll bring him back, because obviously there were three of them, so why not the rise of a fourth? Come on, let's see it happen. But above and beyond that, though, just to answer and address the question, they've done the RTS thing. They've done the RTS thing several times over, and they're very, very good at it. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. They're very good at that style of game, but maybe that style of game isn't the most popular style of game anymore. Maybe people are interested in different stuff. I don't know. Like I said, I would love to see them tackle a single-player RPG. I would like to see that come out of Blizzard, because they have a bunch of really creative people in there, and I have no doubt that they could pull it off and give us something completely extraordinary. So... that's my bid for Overwatch. If they want to give us more story in Overwatch, like playable story, that's the route I think that they should go. But, you know, that's me.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be an easy route, too, because Blizzard's thing, like, I think, was it Rossi said, was that they're not really focused on single-player stuff? Or was that you, Ann? I don't know. One of you said that.
I said that, but mostly, like, they're not doing a lot of stuff that's not multiplayer.
Yeah, and this would be, you know, it's a single-player experience, but it ties into a multiplayer game. And I think, you know, Blizzard would want that as opposed to a brand new single-player game, because their thing right now seems to be, how can you make games that people continue to play?
Guys, if they didn't do a single-player, it's going to be Blackthorn.
Vikings?
No, it's going to be Blackthorn.
Blackthorn.
We haven't seen Blackthorn in like 15 years, man. It's time. Time for the return of Blackthorn. Nothing else you say matters.
There are genres that they haven't done in a while, and, you know, racing is one of those.
Blackthorn Racing. I got you. I understand where you're going.
Rock and roll Blackthorn Racing.
Yes.
Blackthorn could easily be the lead singer of a band.
He could. He could, probably. I bet you. All right. We are fully off topic, and honestly, we should probably start wrapping it up here. So, Blizzard Watch. It's made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch, and your continued support means that this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience.
Thank you very much, Anne. This has been the Blizzard Watch podcast. Again, if you do have an email for us, please send it to podcast@blizzardwatch.com. I'm Matt Rossi. I've been hosting, and thank you guys very much for listening, and we will be here next week.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.